Hello and welcome to the Exotic Pet Collective, where we talk about tarantulas, scorpions, and all pets exotic. I'm your host, Richard, and you may know me from my YouTube channel, The Tarantula Collective. And today we have a special guest that's agreed to sit down and talk to me about their journey keeping exotic pets. Now, this week's episode is brought to you by thetarantulacollective.com. You can find care sheets, merchandise, discount codes, list of breeders, all those things. Just check out thetarantulacollective.com. Stay connected and up to date with everything that's going on in the collective, and sign up for the mailing list if you want to get first access to new content. This couple makes custom-designed terrariums, cages, and enclosures for tarantulas and inverts, and you've seen their enclosures showcased on YouTube videos by the Tarantula Collective, Tarantula Haven, Tarantula Cat, and Aquarimax Pets YouTube channels. So please welcome to the podcast, Mo and Alina from Tarantula Cribs.
Hey there.
Hi.
Thanks for having us on today.
Thank you.
Appreciate you all coming. Thanks very much. I have been a huge fan of your enclosures. You sent me some, it was a few months back now.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, how did you all get into making enclosures?
Yeah, so what happened was my wife, Alina, here actually started her own business after she bought a laser cutter, and I saw that she was making all kinds of cool things, decorations for weddings and all that, and she was using acrylic, and it just so happened this was right around the time of the pandemic, and it was right around the time I bought a couple new tarantulas, and I needed some enclosures, but everything was closed, and I saw that she was cutting acrylic, and I put two and two together and thought maybe she can help me out with building an enclosure. So she was cutting acrylic. She cut the squares out, and we kind of had to figure out how to glue it together, and it was quite a process, but it all started based out of that. It was kind of a fluke, and actually, Alina built the first one, and it took a while. You can remember that. What was that like?
Yeah, it took a while to figure out which glue would work best, which glue kept the edges sealed properly so that it wouldn't leak out. Then we had to figure out the size of the ventilation holes so that they weren't too big or that they weren't too small.
Yeah, actually, the first enclosure we built was for a pumpkin patch, and it was 4x3x4, something like that. And we kind of engraved on there pumpkin patch, tarantula, and all that. And we actually still use it today. It was quite a process, though, as she was talking about. The gluing was probably one of the most difficult parts because regular super glue just doesn't work. So we had to figure out how to kind of weld the two pieces of acrylic together. And so once we figured that out, it became a lot faster, but it was all just because the pandemic, nothing was available. Normally you can just go to the container store, which we have one here in St. Louis, but it was closed down for quite a while. And so there's just not too much available. And I'm all for using like Tupperware and all that, but I wanted something clear, especially for our tarantula, like the pumpkin patch that has all these nice colors, and you wanted to see it and take pictures of it. And so that's kind of where we wanted to go with the acrylic.
Yeah. I mean, I've used a lot of different things for enclosures, and you know, I got to say, and it's not just because you guys are on the podcast, but the enclosures you all make are some of my favorite. It probably definitely my favorite that I have down here. I've got some of my, I'm looking at them right now. Some of my, my favorite species hanging out in there. And so far they've been working really well. They're nice. They're clear. They're sturdy. And that's one thing I liked about them. AMAC boxes are readily available and are inexpensive, but they're also very flimsy and they cloud really easy. And, you know, I've just had a lot of issues with, especially with the lids. Like they'll be nice and tight when I buy them, but after a few months of use, they really start getting loose, like almost to the point a tarantula could just push them right off. And your all's enclosures have those, the locking lids. You're using magnets to lock those, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, what happened there? The pumpkin patch one I was talking about, that one actually, we just had a, I just taped the lid shut, to be honest. And we kind of went from there, and then we kind of evolved and said, we got to figure something else out. And then we could glue a hinge on there and put a lock, but I just didn't like the looks of that. And so the next thing I thought of was maybe trying a magnet. And that was kind of a process in itself, because the magnet doesn't really glue on to acrylic very well. And so you have to figure out a way to make it adhere. And we did have a few enclosures that the magnets, I think, popped off. And even after we were first selling on Etsy, I think we had one or two people come back to us and tell us that the magnets came off. And so we replaced those, and you know, we just had to figure out a better way to do it. And so what I ended up doing was, while acrylic doesn't bind to magnets very well, acrylic and does bind to acrylic. And so we kind of put the magnet inside of an acrylic case. And so that way the magnet is not physically adhered to the acrylic, but it's kind of encased in it. And so as you see in your enclosures, that's kind of what the next step was. But then that's pretty time consuming to make those little acrylic places. So
yeah, that's
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Making the little squares to put the magnets in.
Yeah. And especially after the orders picked up, it was just, I mean, it's taken hours. And so we had to kind of figure out another way. And that's kind of where we had to reach out and ask for help. And that's where we went out to some of the manufacturers and kind of work with them now, instead of us building it directly at home, because it's just too many orders to fulfill. But yeah, I think the magnets overall are a good idea. I think there were some people that I talked to that were worried about the tarantulas being able to push open the magnets. And so we had to make sure that they were either strong enough or there was a way to prevent the tarantulas from, you know, pushing, because they are strong. And I mean, I used to have a full adult Brachypoma smithii or a Harmori. I'm not sure. It was a long time ago. And that tarantula was able to push up the whole screen mesh. This was like years ago, before we had any acrylic tops or anything like that. And it was able to push up the whole screen mesh on my 10-gallon tank. And I remember having to put like textbooks on it, because it was, you know, it was that strong. So I know the magnets have to be pretty serious. You know, we don't want anyone getting out.
Very true. Yeah, that's an issue that I've had with some of my screen enclosures. Not just that the tarantulas are strong enough to push them out, but that they can, like, they break easy, especially those thin mesh ones. Tarantulas can chew through them. I had one, it was a Zoomed enclosure, one of their like glass ones that has a screen mesh, and my cat sat on it and completely just ripped the mesh out. Luckily there wasn't a tarantula in it at the time, but I was like, yeah, that's a problem. Yeah. When I got your all's enclosures in the mail, that was one of the first things I did, was test just to see how strong those magnets were. Cause there's a couple other people out there that have made some enclosures that had magnets. And one of the issues was, one, they didn't stay glued, so they kept falling off, which was very frustrating. But also they were just weak magnets that sometimes wouldn't even hold the weight of the door, let alone any pressure applied. Yeah. And that was something I tried to showcase in my video, was just like how strong, I mean, you got a lot of magnets, but they also seem like high quality, strong magnets, and it would like almost pull the door in and lock into place. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. And the second mechanism that we kind of tried to make sure that was built in there, was that there's a channel built around the lid. And so a tarantula really couldn't get his paws or claws under that channel and push it open. And so a couple of the enclosures we made that were prototypes didn't have that, but we definitely changed that up. So I think, nothing's impossible. Anything can happen, but I think it would be pretty unlikely for anything to get out. Of course, there's always room for improvement, and we're always looking for new ideas. So, you know, if anyone has any or you have any, let us know.
Yeah. I thought that was a very genius kind of feature to those enclosures that had that sliding door. Cause it was like, there really is no way for the tarantula to, and I was using it for one of my scorpions, and I knew the scorpion couldn't really crawl up the side, but I was like, if it could get its claws, something like, cause those things are like, I've had that thing. I was using like a thick reptile screen, you know, like the thick wire mesh. And I had like the locks on it and everything. Like I was like, there's no way a scorpion is going to be able to get out. And it was able to wedge itself up on the background, like in between the background and the top of the screen, and push itself up, even with those strong locks, enough for it to like squeeze out. And it happened when I was actually, I was out of town, and my kid's grandmother found the scorpion walking across the floor.
Oh my.
Kind of freaked out. I was like, of course that would happen when we weren't here. but that's why I was like, it's what, one of the things I really liked about the Tarantula Cribs enclosures was that it was the way that the screen or the lid goes into the top of it. It's really just not accessible.
Right.
It's very cool. How long did it take you like just to design these enclosures? Like how many prototypes do you go through?
Yeah, initially, like that first enclosure we built, I mean, it took several hours, I think, on the computer just designing it. And then that we had to cut it out and translate that over to the laser cutter. And then from there we had to figure out how much of the acrylic is melting with the laser cutter. And that was kind of an adjustment. I think mostly you figured that out.
Yeah.
But then after we kind of got that design, we had to make some improvements with the ventilation and all of that. So, I mean, it took probably like 6 weeks or something for that very first one.
Yeah, to get it just right so that we were satisfied with it. Yeah, it took a little while.
Yeah, about 6 weeks with that very first enclosure. And then after that, it went by faster. So each enclosure after that kind of was a little bit easier. And then when we started to work with some of the manufacturers, they had some ideas too. And so we kind of worked with them and everything kind of snowballed after that. So it's a little bit easier now, but that first enclosure was a good 6 weeks.
I could imagine. And I've noticed that, especially you just sent me, it was like a large and a medium. I'm not exactly sure how you have them labeled on your website, but you have both cross ventilation and some top ventilation. Like how did you decide where to put the ventilation holes?
So to be honest, a part of it is not just functional, like in terms of ventilation. I wanted to have good aesthetics. So I wanted you to be able to see the tarantula or see whatever you're housing in there. And I wanted there to be clarity. And so I wasn't a fan of the enclosures that have too much ventilation, not just because of humidity and all that. I know that's a concern, but also the ventilation holes kind of obstruct the view of the tarantula. And so I felt that having a front that is mostly clear is a good idea, and then a top. And so then going from there, we needed to also make sure there was adequate ventilation. And so I know cross ventilation is a big deal. So we just did one on holes on the left and the right of the enclosure, and then the top. Yeah. And then the top, and that for the sliding ones, for the cubes. The holes are meant to be small enough because those are for slings, and so they're all around, and I don't feel like it obstructs the view. In terms of an arboreal enclosure that's coming out, I know cross ventilation is really important for that, and since that's a taller enclosure, we needed to have cross ventilation at the top and the bottom. A lot of the enclosures have it kind of right in the middle, which is good, but I think that obstructs the view a little bit. So I wanted to change it up just a tiny bit. So if you look on the website, you can kind of see the pictures of how the ventilation is on that. And I think, I don't know if anyone else has done it like that, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully it works out just fine.
I look forward to seeing that. Now, the one of the things I thought was really cool, you mentioned the cubes and stuff. That are more built for spiderlings. Now you actually took into consideration the size of those ventilation holes so that a sling wouldn't be able to squeeze out of them.
That's right. Yeah. Those ventilation holes are quite small. I think they're about 2 millimeters or so. So I think even the small, it's fine for the smallest of slings, and the lid sits pretty flush. So you shouldn't be having any issue getting out, and a sling can't push those magnets out either. So I think the main purpose was for slings or dwarf tarantulas, because we don't make the cubes too much bigger just because it's pretty hard, and the bigger you make an enclosure, the thicker the acrylic needs to be. And there is a shortage of acrylic right now with the pandemic going on, and so it's hard to find.
Really? I did not know that.
Thick acrylic. Yeah. I guess
that makes sense.
Yeah, with all the screen protectors and, you know, at the store, you got all the dividers. Yeah, the shields. There's a lot of acrylic in use. And so the price of acrylic right now is kind of expensive. Hopefully it goes down. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. If the supply and demand has changed, so that means that the price of acrylic that you use to make the enclosures has also gone up.
Correct. Yeah, I think about May, we're having a hard time getting any acrylic in. I think looked around all over the place, and we finally found someone who was getting some in intermittently. But even then, there's different color acrylic. So there's, you know, black and gold and all kinds of colors, but we needed clear, and the clear one is the one that's being sold out. And so for a while, it was really hard to find. We just bought a ton of it and had it shipped to the house. The mailman was like, "What is going on? What are you guys doing?"
I'm sure that he loved you. Like, I'm sure that would be very frustrating to start a business making acrylic enclosures during a pandemic when all of a sudden the availability of acrylic just kind of the bottom falls out and it's really difficult to find.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, all things considered, there's the pandemic, you know, was pretty tough for a lot of people, but all things considered, I think starting a business during the pandemic, I think was a blessing in a sense, as I mean, neither of us were working as much. And so we had kind of something to do and start a new business. I mean, that being said, the acrylic is expensive and all that. And so it's a little bit stressful, but I think it's a little bit easier now to find acrylic. I've been able to get it pretty easily over the last few weeks. So I think things are getting better.
Yeah, I think so.
And you guys, you mentioned that you're located in St. Louis. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what is going on in St. Louis? Because I may have been in the hobby for a while, and it seems like you guys have the Tarantula Takeover reptile show. It's like a show that it becomes like a tarantula expo. You've got YouTubers. You've got breeders. Like, it seems like St. Louis is becoming a hub for the tarantula hobby. Like, what's going on there?
I know, it's pretty neat. You know, I didn't know that it was that big around here until pretty much in the last few months or last year or so. You know, they always have these reptile shows, and we kind of go, and slowly the tarantula section just kept getting bigger and bigger, and thought it was pretty cool. But then they had Tarantula Takeover. I actually didn't make it to that, unfortunately, the first one. The second one we did go to, and we vended at, but the first one we didn't make it to, but we definitely saw the people's YouTube videos and all that. And then Cat being around here and Simply Spiders, you know, it's pretty neat for sure. Actually, it's kind of interesting because I went to high school with Dustin from Simply Spiders.
And, did you?
actually didn't even know it. Realized later on.
That's funny. Yeah, I got invited to the one in, I think it was the first Tarantula Takeover, but it was like right after the Chicago or the Tinley NARBC. And I was just like, that's too much traveling. And, you know, like it just didn't seem feasible. And I also was kind of like, I guess in my mind, I was like, that's going to be lame. And then I saw all the pictures and videos. I was like, man, I really wish I would have gone. And I was kind of looking forward to maybe going this year. But with, you know, COVID and everything,
It didn't seem hard.
Like a responsible thing to do.
It was actually really busy, even for COVID. I was a little bit concerned, but it turned out to be
If I lived in St. Louis, I totally would have been there. But I'm in a small town in the hills of West Virginia. And I didn't want to be the one dude that, like, left town and then came back with COVID. Because my name would be all over the news. It's like, I don't want to do that.
Gave it to everyone in the holler.
that's exactly it. But, it's been fascinating for me to kind of watch. Because, like you mentioned, tarantula cats out there. You know, she's been doing a lot. And you guys, there are tarantulas that are native to that area, correct? Like, I mean, do they ever wander into the city?
No, I look for them. I haven't ever found one. And I'll admit, sometimes I go down to if I see a little hole in the ground, I'll try and take a little straw or a little piece of grass and try and lure one out. But I haven't seen anything, you know, not around here at least. You know, I know a cat rescued one, the dumpster tarantula, but I have one. We have the it's at the Hensi. I think it's just the Aphonopelma Hensi that's around here. I don't think we have anything else. And I think most of the range is southern, so probably down more in the Ozarks and south of St. Louis. And then I think one of the barriers to the Hensi traveling up north is just the Missouri River. I actually don't think the range goes up above that. I think I've read somewhere that the Missouri River is a barrier to them moving up north.
That would make sense.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So just a little gossip. Have you met Tarantula Cat in person?
We have a couple times at one of the local pet stores around here.
Awesome. That's cool.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
So I went to Arizona. My wife and I had our honeymoon in Sedona, and she got really frustrated because I just wanted to look for tarantulas while we were there. We're doing hiking and stuff like that. I was like, we gotta find a tarantula. And it was frustrating because we would be, you know, like walking from our hotel room to a restaurant or something like that. And we'd hear people that we were passing on the sidewalk being like, oh my God, did you see that tarantula? That was so huge. And I'd be like, where did you see it? And I would go to where they described. There would be no tarantula there. Like we're hiking on the trails and people are talking about, like we went to see these ruins and it was like way out in a canyon. And while we were riding out there, our guide was like over the walkie talkie. Somebody was warning him, hey, we just came across, you know, a big tarantula on the trail. So be careful when you're taking your group down there. And I was excited, and we were there for like 8 days and I didn't see a single tarantula. And this was like in September. You know what I mean? Like males should be walking around everywhere.
Yeah.
And it seems like everybody else got to see one but me. Yeah. It's so frustrating.
I haven't.
But in my mind, for some reason, and I think it's probably just from watching Tarantula Cat's video on the dumpster tarantula she found, like, or just hearing people talk. For some reason, I thought that, you know, in St. Louis, they'd just be like wandering the neighborhoods or something like that.
No.
But I guess that makes sense with the river.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit further south, and I'm sure if you look hard enough you can probably find something. But
are there a lot of pet shops down there that carry tarantulas like regularly?
Yeah, so well I guess the first tarantula I ever got was when I was 16 years old. My parents didn't let me have one, and this was right after I could drive. I got in the car and went to the pet store with my cousin, and we stopped by one of the local mom and pop pet shops, and they just happened to have a Redney, and I don't know if it was a Smithy or a Harmony at that time, but we picked it up, and the pet store didn't kind of know what they had. They just said that someone dropped it off there. They sold it to me for $15 and just picked it up, and it was pretty sweet. Didn't really know what we were doing. Went home, yeah. Put it in a 10-gallon tank. It was a sub-adult. It was probably already like 4 or 5 inches by then. And just put some dirt in there and started feeding crickets. And at that time, there wasn't really a lot of information out there. I mean, I remember trying to look on the internet, but there just wasn't a lot. But, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing. I had probably like 2 or 3 inches of substrate and then a 10-gallon tank, so it was pretty high, and then a screen mesh lid, and I remember it climbing up to the top, and it did actually get its leg stuck a couple times, and I'd always have to kind of remove it and take it down. Never lost a leg or fell down or anything like that, thankfully, but that was the first encounter with the pet store, and then after that, PetSmart and Petco and all that, they do in some stores sell some of the tarantulas, but I've never bought one there. Then we have a couple more pet shops. Tropical World Pets and Exotic Arc are the two that I've kind of been to and kind of get all my stuff from now. And those two happen to be the pet stores that we now kind of sell in. So it kind of worked out.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you actually have your enclosures in brick and mortar stores.
Yeah. Yep. Those two.
That's awesome.
Exotic Arc, a few months ago, we had our first order there a few months ago. And then after that, Tropical World Pets. So it's, you know, it's going good. They both have a pretty good selection of tarantulas. So anytime you're in St. Louis, definitely check them out.
Yeah. I have one of the moderators in my Facebook group, Debbie, she works part time at one in, I think it's in St. No, O'Fallon. Is that St. Louis area? I don't even know.
O'Fallon, Illinois. I think there's a pet shop down there called Tie-Dye Iguana. I've never been out there. Yeah. It's a little bit further from me. But I heard they have a pretty good selection as well. They're at all the pet expos too. They have a pretty big stand usually.
Yeah, I usually admit I am not the smartest man in the world, especially when it comes to geography. I've been doing podcasts with people in the UK, and I have to admit, like, I really have no idea, like, any relation to where you are in relation to where I am. In my mind, Missouri is just all St. Louis. Like, I forget that it's actually a very large state. Yeah. So it's probably not as close to you in reality as it is in my mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're about half an hour out from Illinois, so it's not too far, but I just haven't made it out there.
I understand. Have you ever gone to NARBC, the North American Reptile Breeders Conference?
So we went to the one in St. Louis or in St. Charles, but we did not go to, we haven't been to Tinley. Always wanted to make it out there, but it's just never worked out. Hopefully the St. Louis one was okay. I heard that it wasn't as big, obviously, as the one in Tinley Park, Chicago, but hopefully next year, if COVID can kind of calm down.
Yeah, it's where I kind of screwed myself is I had never really been to a reptile expo before. There's one about 2 hours south of me in a small town in West Virginia. It's like a traveling expo, so it'll be like in the capital 1 month, and then the next month it's like in Parkersburg and then Beckley. So it tries to like go all the way around the state. And I was coming back from visiting my parents. My wife and I stopped in the town and was like, hey, there's a reptile expo here. Let's check it out. And we go there, and it was probably 10 dealers. Like, I paid 10 bucks to get in. And then you walk in, it's like, this is it? Like, it's just like a circle of tables around the outside of this small room. And it didn't really have anything exciting. And they had a couple tarantulas. They were labeled baboon spiders. And I was like, do you know what species this is? And they're like, it's a baboon spider. I'm like, do you know what country it's from? Like, can I? And then they open it up, and the two they had was an HMAC and an OBT. And they just like, they're opening them up, looking at like it's no big deal. This tarantula's not going to hurt you. I'm like, that's a crazy species to just have and leave open on your table. Like, I would not do that, but
definitely.
They did have a Lossiadora periabana, full grown female with the enclosure. Of course it had like an inch of substrate in there. You know, the poor thing had webbed the place completely. It was a beautiful spider. It just wasn't kept well, but they were one like $500. Like, includes the enclosure. Wow. And I'm like, that's a 10 gallon fish tank. Like, that's 10 bucks. Come on.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Was that a long time ago
4 years ago, maybe. Okay. But like that, I went there and I was really disappointed, and I was like, yeah, I'm not paying to go in somewhere to, you know, when I've got a better collection at my house. It's kind of like my mindset. So I never went to another one until Tanya, Fear Not Tarantulas, invited me out to their booth at Tinley.
Yeah.
And I went there and I was like, this is a completely different world. Like, there are species here I've never seen. Like, it was amazing. It really blew my mind. And now that's like the only ones. I just keep going back to that one. I went to, I think it's called Steel City Reptile Expo. It's in right outside Pittsburgh. And that one was pretty good. It was like in an ice hockey rink. And that kind of like, okay, cool. Maybe the smaller shows aren't all so bad, because they had a good selection. They even had a couple tarantula dealers there. Nice. But you don't see a whole lot of people that are just selling tarantula enclosures, which I think is something that's like, I mean, for years, that's something that's been really frustrating to me, is that I always have to buy a reptile enclosure and then retrofit it for a tarantula. Or I have to, the ones that are for sale, like, there's a lot on, you know, like they're coming from China or something, like, you can order them on Wish or on Amazon, but you got to like put them together with rubber bands or, they're really low quality, and they end up being more frustration than they're worth. I mean, I think it's really cool that you guys have gotten into this niche. I mean, are you feel like people are responding well to it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think kind of part of it is that I've kind of always liked like terrariums and just enclosures and making cool setups and that kind of thing. And so we wanted to have something that could kind of accommodate that, because we liked having the display tarantulas and all of that. And I think part of the issue is that none of these real big companies are making anything is because, you know, it's so niche that I just don't know if that they feel that they can make a lot of money on it. And from our standpoint, we're not like a big company or anything like that. And so we're not, our main goal isn't to try and make a ton of money. We just wanted to have something cool in it. We didn't realize it would pop off so big. And I think that was kind of with that Patreon video that you had. And I think that's what kind of made all of this take off. And so we've kind of gone with it and enjoy it. We really enjoy it. And I think, yeah, it has, I think it has picked up. I mean, when we started our Instagram in May, we had, like 100 followers, and now we're up to almost 3,000. I think it's just picking up and picking up steam. And I mean, there's still a long way to go, a lot of improvements to make. And from a business standpoint, there's a lot of room to grow and a lot of improvements to make. For example, shipping's an issue. After all these YouTube videos and all that, the orders are just coming in, and it's just me and her. And so it's pretty hard to keep up, and we got two kids at home. So what we're going to do is we're in the process of transitioning out to a fulfillment company, and all our products are going to be stored in a warehouse, and then they're just going to be packaged and shipped out by a third party. And so I think that'll let us focus on running the business and allow us to kind of grow and expand and also have better customer satisfaction from that standpoint.
Yeah. It's probably a good idea. I've noticed that with my, like, just selling, you know, my stupid t-shirts online. Like, it got to, like, I was ordering them and then having to store them and then package them. And, you know, as I screw up a lot. So I would send the wrong t-shirts to the wrong people. And I was just, I was like, this is, it became a full-time job just dealing with shipping and tracking and, just outsourcing that to a drop shipper was probably one of the best decisions I think I've made. It just made my life a whole lot easier.
For sure.
I couldn't make mistakes,
but it happens.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine, though, doing enclosures, like especially people that are ordering multiple ones. Like, that would be so frustrating. Right. Yeah, so you guys work on this. I'm sorry, go ahead.
One of the hardest parts about the enclosures is just that the fact that acrylic is durable, but I mean, it can't survive a big fall. And so just shipping. Shipping lately has kind of been a mess with the pandemic. Things are delayed. You know, they have less staff available. So, you know, there's a big hurdle there. But shipping the enclosures, and then they crack if they fall. And that's costly on just the shipping end, because it costs like $15, $15 to $20. If I'm shipping to California, it costs $20 to ship out a large enclosure. So that's $20 gone, and then the enclosure itself, we got to replace it. And so that's a big problem. And I'm hoping that with the fulfillment company, maybe they have better connections or even just packaging ideas. We try and do what we can with foam inserts and all that, but still sometimes they break, and it's gotten better, but I think there's still room for improvement there.
Yeah. I was impressed with the two packages you sent me, because like I said, I'm in a small town, especially compared to St. Louis, but I get my package delivered to a small town outside of the town I live in. I get an even smaller, tiny town. There's like three people at the post office. So I know them personally because my day job, I do a lot of shipping, sell a lot of stuff on eBay for the business I work for. And I know how rough just those individuals are on packages. Even if I'm like, this is glass, please be careful. Yeah, like I'll see him walk out the door and throw it into the truck. I'm like, God, come on, Steve. Like, we know each other. We've been knowing each other for years. Why are you doing me like this? Yeah. So when I just assume, like, anything I get sent, if it's not, that's why, like, I try not to have any live animals sent through USPS, even if they're not venomous. Like, if it's something like isopods or something that somebody could send legally through the post office, I'm always like, just use FedEx. Trust me, I'll pay the extra, because I know that FedEx will hold it at the hub, and they may be just as rough with the packages. I don't know, but I know those guys are rough with packages because I see it. But when you got those enclosures, I didn't even think about how fragile they were, and I opened them up, and I mean, they were packed really, there was no cracks, no scratches. It was like you had them, the enclosures inside of a box, like, and then that box in a box with foam and stuff. So, I mean, it seemed like it takes a lot of effort for you guys packing those up.
Yeah. I mean, we've experimented I've tried to, when we first started, I sent a few out that didn't have any, just a normal box with some bubble wrap. And yeah, and it, you know, not every single one cracked, but we did get a higher return, probably like, I don't know, 5% of them were cracking. So then that was just too much and too expensive. So now we go to a foam insert, and then
the corners.
Corner protectors, and then a box inside of that. So the box that holds acrylic is not touching the outer box. So far, that's been pretty good. I've only had one come back broken. So fingers crossed.
Well, it reminded me of the same style of packaging that people use when they're shipping out live tarantulas. Mm-hmm. So I was like, are there live tarantulas in here? Like, nope, just enclosures. So, I mean, I imagine that's got to be tough. So you guys, this is like, are you all married or?
Yeah. We're married. Actually, it's kind of funny. When we've been married 7 years, going on 8, and I don't think either of us had really been to a reptile show before that, but pretty much a month after we got married, I think one of the big reptile shows, I don't remember if it was Repticon or something, came by, and we went together, and that's where we picked up like a few reptiles or 3 turtles, right?
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but then they got pretty big, and we moved, and we had to donate them to the city museum.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're both into this? You're both into the hobby?
So, you know, she started it with making it and designing it, doing all the computer work on Adobe and all of that, and so she still helps with that. But now I've pretty much taken over, I think, most of the business, and that's mostly because we have 2 little ones and 1 on the way coming, so...
Yeah. You know, I don't mean just making enclosures. I mean, like, just keeping exotic pets in general. I mean, is that something you're both into, or is it mainly you and she's supporting you?
Oh, no. She just picked up a panther chameleon at NARBC. So that's her newest addition right now.
Yeah.
And then she picked up a corn snake a few months ago. But that was mostly for the kids. They wanted that.
Oh, yep. The kids love that. Yeah, my parents... My parents would only they were really weird. I could never get a tarantula or a scorpion when I was a kid. But I had hamsters and like tree frogs, and there was like a lot of salamanders and newts and stuff out where I am. So I would go to Boy Scout camp or something, always come back with a turtle or some kind of thing, and they'd let me keep it. And so I always had like a whole bunch of I guess you would kind of call them exotic pets. And my mom always teases me because I was in elementary school and I had some hamsters and they had babies, and I had like set this thing up with the pet shop here. It was like back when there was actually locally owned pet shops. Like now it's all just Petco or PetSmart, it seems, at least in my area.
Yeah.
But I would bring them the babies and they would buy them from me $1 a piece that I could use to then buy supplies for my hamsters and stuff like that. So I kind of had like a business going at a young age, just breeding hamsters to pay for the hobby. It was kind
That's
of
cool.
a, It was a cool little thing.
Yeah.
But I was really excited when I was able to get my first tarantula. And my wife is supportive, but she's not a huge fan of spiders. You know what I mean? Like she allows it, and I think she likes watching them and looking at them, but she definitely doesn't want to be feeding them or rehousing or anything like that. She'll leave the room while I'm doing that.
I think she's kind of the same way. Yeah. I mean, pretty supportive. You told me I could get a T. Caledonia, but I think I mostly take care of the tarantulas. But you still, I mean, you do some of the, you do like the, she takes care of the dubias that we are trying to breed.
Ooh. Panther. Yeah. My wife does like snakes. She picked up an Eastern king snake, and she got a ball python and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
But they're in the same room, so I usually end up taking care of them just because I'm already down here doing stuff with the tarantulas, so then I just go ahead and clean their enclosures or feed them or whatever. So she kind of, she lucked out there, but it's cool when you have like a partnership, you know what I mean? I think that's really cool. This is something you guys can do together.
Yeah. I mean, our parents think we're crazy, but I mean, you had turtles like a long time ago too, right?
You had
turtles growing up, and you had birds. And
We had cats.
Cats.
They didn't allow anything else.
Yeah. But growing up, I just had that one. I mean, I had that one tarantula for like 16 years or something. And that Brachypelma. And know, I don't know. It was a mature female. I think it just died from old age. But for a while then we went to turtles and that kind of thing and fish, and then got back into
training. Yeah, we had like salt water and freshwater fish.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I've never been brave enough to try saltwater fish.
Oh yeah. It was a lot of work.
But it was a lot of work. Yeah. He'd always be measuring the water and making sure the salt levels were okay.
Yeah. It got busy. And that was before.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in a small apartment. My dad would always say, he feels like he's at Red Lobster whenever he comes to our apartment. Because then we had like brine shrimp that we were breeding for the cichlids.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
My dad had a fish tank. There was just always a fish tank in our living room growing up, but it was fresh water and, you know, I tried to get one for my kid a couple years ago. He really wanted to get some fish, and I don't know what it is. I always struggle, even with freshwater tanks. I was not able to keep them going more than like 6 months. Everything would just start dying off. And
I'm trying something new.
I don't. I have a paludarium that has I've got like the bottom of it's kind of like a 4 gallon fish tank. Okay. And I was talking to the guys at the pet shop. I'm like, I need something that I can do. I was like, I explained to my struggles, and they suggested snails, ghost shrimp, and a betta. They're like, you got a betta, just one betta in there. You don't have to worry about anything else. And I was like, all right, cool. Yeah. So far that's going well. I'm making a YouTube video on it, but I'm taking my time because I don't want to like make a video like, hey, I've got this awesome beta living in this paludarium, and then the next week it dies. So it's like, we're gonna take our time here. Make sure I've got this husbandry down.
I know. I'm excited to see what you're housing in there.
Yeah, it's part of the reason I haven't told anyone yet is because I have an idea of what I'm putting in there, but I really got to give enough. I just got to see how the whole enclosure develops. You know, like, I don't want to put a species in there that's not going to work. I'm like 90% sure it's going to work for this tarantula. But there's issues. I mean, when you have a waterfall feature in an enclosure and stuff like that, there can be a lot of issues with just it getting too humid or water leaking. And, you know, I got to make sure everything is nice and sealed and set up well before I introduce a tarantula in there.
But get the isopod colony going and springtails and all that.
So it's been a slow process, but it's coming together. I think it's, I don't even know. I set up the waterfall because I didn't want to run it all the time. And I have a thermostat for my snake's enclosure, like for its heat mat. And it, you know, it turns on and off throughout the day. And it had multiple plugins you could have for whatever reason. Like you could plug in the heat mat and the heat light and all that kind of stuff. But I'm only using the heat pad. So I plug the waterfall into that. So the waterfall only kicks on when the tarantula's or when the snake's heat pad turns on.
Oh, nice.
So it's like just that's sporadically cool. Throughout the day. It's kind of neat.
That's neat.
I'm enjoying that.
Yeah. That'll be a good video.
So you said you got your first tarantula when you were 16 years old, and there wasn't a whole lot of information out there. So I'm curious, like, I mean, not to like call you out, put you on blast and anything like that, but like, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not trying to expose your age, but I'm just curious, like, how long ago was that? When was this?
So I'm 33 now, so I don't know, do the math, but I had that tarantula for, I don't know, another, 10, 15 years, I don't know exactly, until it passed. And then after that, it wasn't until after that that we kind of got the next one. But yeah, 33 years old and trying to get this tarantula cribs thing going.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure, because I know when I first started, there wasn't a lot of information out there, but it was also, the internet just wasn't what it is today. Like I still had dial up back then. I mean, we had, I think I had a girlfriend, we had an apartment and we had like, it was a 2-bedroom apartment. It was just the two of us. So that was like our office is what we called it, but neither one of us did any, you know, we worked retail, we worked for Hot Topic. So it wasn't like we needed an office. It was more like the room that we put the computer in. You know, it was like MySpace and, you know, Napster, LimeWire. You know, like that was what we used it for. I say that a lot. Like I didn't get information off. There wasn't anything available, but then I'm also at the same time like, well, maybe I just wasn't looking. Like, I don't, there could have been stuff. I never even, it never even crossed my mind.
Yeah. Look. I mean, but that's true.
My experience was very similar to yours, where it was, I had a rose hair tarantula, but I kept it deplorably, compared to what, how we keep them now.
Yeah, for sure. It wasn't easy to find information, at least. I don't know. There might have been some forums. I don't know when arachnoboards and all that started. But definitely it was not easy to find anything back then. They had the care sheets at like PetSmart, but
the same care sheets they had then, they still have today. I don't think they've updated them at all.
Yeah. The sponge in the water.
Yeah. It's pretty wild stuff. Now you guys, I've made this video kind of talking about the enclosures that you guys sent me, and I've had a lot of people from the UK and from Spain and Norway and like just all across Europe. Like, we love these enclosures. How can we get them? And I'm sure you've been talking about the shipping and, it's very cost prohibitive, but I mean, have you tried to figure out any way to ship internationally? Is that a possibility sometime in the future?
Yeah. So, I mean, we get those messages all the time. And honestly, I get so many, I can't reply to them all. People are like, why are you not shipping? Or people are getting kind of angry. It's kind of funny. I mean that lightheartedly. But it's right now with the pandemic, I think it's just pretty hard to get that going. I did ship one enclosure to Canada once, and I think the shipping was like between $20 and $40 or something like that. So it was like a $25 enclosure, and it ended up being like $45 or something just with the shipping. But in the future, I hope to be able to ship at least to England and then Europe first.
Yeah.
And then kind of go from there. The way we'll have to do it is we'll have to figure out a distributor in the United Kingdom or in Europe or something like that. And so I don't know. I don't know any offhand. I'm not too well connected over there, but if someone listening knows something, then we can definitely get something started. And it's definitely something we're interested in. I think it would be the next best step for the company. I think that would be a good idea. And we're definitely looking into it. I definitely have already emailed a few people and just waiting on responses and waiting to try and figure things out, cost and all that.
I'm sure it'll be a lot easier once acrylic is more available and the pandemic is starting to wind down whenever that is going to be. But I didn't even think about it when I made the video. You probably mentioned it, but I didn't even think about the issues shipping internationally and like, just got inundated with messages and stuff. I'm like, look, I'm not Tarantula Cribs customer service, but I can't speak for them. But I'm sure when they can ship to other countries, they definitely will.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be cool to bring it up and see if there's any kind of time frame.
I mean, I know people seem very excited. To another country, it's just the shipping would be very expensive, and I think that most people wouldn't want that right now. And I need to figure out a cheaper way to do it, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, it makes it very difficult. Even like when I was, before I got a drop shipper and I was just shipping t-shirts and stickers and stuff, just the shipping itself to like, Europe was expensive, but then there was like VAT and customs, like all these other fees, and people were complaining like I had to pay as much in customs as I did for the shirt. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know how to get around that. But I found a company that anybody that orders pretty much anywhere that's outside of the US, they just make the shirts in that country. Like it's a Scandinavian country or something like that. So they just make them and ship them from there so that they can service all of Europe, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
When you do that, it really kind of, I just have no idea what the quality of it is. You know what I mean? It's kind of sketchy when you're doing it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far, nobody's really complained too much.
For sure. I think what we'd have to do is, because now we don't make most of the enclosures in-house. Just there's too many. So we outsource to a manufacturer. So we'll have the manufacturer maybe just ship it directly instead of shipping it to our facility and then out to the United Kingdom or something like that. We'll have to work something out. But, we're trying to work on it. We'll see. Hopefully, quickest I would say would be like 3 months.
Yeah, I had somebody send me a message, and they were complaining just about the price of acrylic enclosures, like how much they are. And I was like, I understand where you're coming from, but and I don't know if this is just a coincidence or whatever, but it seems like not too long after you guys started making enclosures, I think it's Zilla came out with their, they came out with these acrylic enclosures for inverts. And they are, I mean, the one I was looking at was like $35 and it was like, 4x4x6 or 4x4x8 or something like that. You know, it's like a small juvenile arboreal enclosure for $35. And it just, they just seem, I mean, you're like, you got to put them together and it just did not look like a high quality product.
Right.
So that's kind of what I was trying to explain to him. I was like, it's just acrylic's expensive, you know?
Yeah. Acrylic is, I mean, if I made a 6-inch cube, so 6x6x6, it would take me 2 sheets of acrylic, and each sheet costs, just the sheet cost about $7. So you're looking at $14. And then after that, that goes into, that's just the, like, the raw material, not like the glue or the magnets or anything else. And so, I mean, definitely right now it's pretty expensive. And I think that is part of the reason that costs are high. I mean, if acrylic cost comes down, then the cost of the enclosures would definitely come down.
But it's also like, that's just kind of the market. That's just what the market, I mean, when you compare any kind of custom enclosure, especially the acrylic ones, to anybody else selling them for whatever other reason, that they're all about around the same price.
Yeah.
And something you guys do that I think is really cool is the custom engraving. Like you sent me some that had the Tarantula Collective logo etched in them, which people have been like sending me, like they want to buy some of those. And I'm like, not yet, maybe one day, but you can engrave like pretty much anything in there. Right.
Yeah. And the engraving part is actually where most of what you do. Mm-hmm. So she kind of takes it and designs it on the computer, and then we can talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, how difficult is it to do that?
It'll take a few hours. Like if somebody sends me a logo, I kind of have to play with the vectors a little bit, like on Adobe Illustrator, to make sure that the laser doesn't go over some points and all the points are connected nicely. Well, once that's in, then I just send it over to you. Then we'll set it up on the machine, kind of do a test run to see how it engraves, make sure it's not engraving too deep or it's not too light. I kind of want to make sure that the lines are all pretty close to each other, so it's a clean engrave. So it looks white when we engrave the backside. It looks white from the front, just to kind of keep all the color, that white color consistent throughout the entire logo.
Yeah, it definitely sometimes takes a couple runs to get through. You do most of the computer work and the graphic design part, and then like we kind of build it on this end over here. But I think with so many orders, it got pretty hard to keep on doing new engravings. So we kind of put that on hold for right now until we can kind of catch up with everything else, outsource the shipping, and then we can get back into the engraving, because it just going one by one,
it takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, people's orders were getting way too delayed doing that.
I kind of feel like what you just alluded to was that she's the brains behind the operation and you're the labor.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So when you guys do the engraving, when you were doing the engraving, what did anybody have anything crazy that they wanted engraved on there that you were just like, what in the world? Was it all pretty standard?
No, I mean, 99% of the time it was like just the Latin names.
And then some people would put their their nicknames for the pet.
Yeah, nicknames for a pet, like, things like that. Someone actually reached out to me one time and didn't even want, I don't know how they found me. They didn't even want a tarantula enclosure. They wanted a jewelry box.
Oh, yeah. So it said ice, right? What did it say? Ice
baby, box.
Or ice box.
Yeah, it said ice box. Nice. I don't know how they found me. So we
added a hinge to it and a locking mechanism.
Yeah, that's what they wanted. Yeah,
but it was basically like the same design minus the holes.
Yeah.
And he kept his watch and wallet in there.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. You put your valuables inside of a clear box that locks.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
That was one of our first orders too.
Yeah.
Nice. Now I had I had tried making my own acrylic enclosures a couple years ago. But essentially all I did was I bought like off Amazon, just an acrylic shoebox or something like that, and then tried to put on hinges and a lock. And I don't think any of them are still around. I think everyone that I made fell apart, you know, like, and it was always at the most inopportune time. I'd be like feeding everybody before I leave town. And then the latch that keeps the door shut would fall off. And I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do now? Yeah. And I was using I don't remember what I used. So many super glue. I used epoxy. I tried to like melt it together. Like nothing would work. How do you guys like? How does that? I mean, I'm not asking you to give away trade secret or anything, but how did you find things that would adhere to acrylic? Like, was that difficult?
Yeah, actually,
we would go out to like the hardware store and like Walmart and just pick up whatever glue we could find. Like, we had all different kinds of super glue. There's so many different glues out there.
Yeah.
There was even acrylic glue, like super glue, but for acrylic, that didn't work very well either. You used a marker to draw where you wanted the glue to stick, and then it was just messy.
Yeah. We spent a lot of money in different kinds of super glue.
Yeah. We tried epoxy too. That was too messy.
Yeah.
There was that aquarium.
Yeah.
What is that material?
Like silicone.
Yeah, like silicone. Okay, that was too messy. It didn't sit well. And then we needed something to dry fast enough so that we could hold the sides together. But we don't want to be sitting there for a while holding them, just for a few seconds. So we kind of can move the pieces around if we need to.
Yeah, we were using like right angle clamps and things like that because the super glue was taking too long to bind to the acrylic. But at the end of the day, I think the glues just don't work that well. No. So acrylic, the best way to deal with acrylic is to actually weld it together. And so that's what we do. We chemically weld it together. There's still errors that can happen, definitely. And with that welding solution there, it can stain the acrylic and all of that. And then there might be little pockets where water can get through and things like that. So there's a lot of trial and error. And it's all handmade. Even the ones that we have manufactured, they're still handmade just by other people at this point. And so there can be variations and there can be little divots and things like
that. So all the enclosures are essentially handmade and welded, like I guess acrylic weld, whatever you call it, welding.
Chemically welded.
Yeah, they're chemically welded.
Yeah. So that's a lot of work that's going into to each enclosure. Yeah. Like, how long do you say, how long would you estimate it takes to make one enclosure?
Yeah, like our first one took like hours. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, so wow. Late.
Yeah.
It took hours just figuring it out. But then like once you kind of got it down.
Once you get it down and once you get down with the application of using like the solutions and all that, it still takes like probably an hour and a half. Yeah. Especially if you have to make the little magnet pieces, then that adds on some time. So if I got like 10 orders in a day, that's talking about like almost a day and a half worth of work. So we just can't do it all at home now. Yeah.
Especially if you're in grade, that doesn't include
that. Yeah, that doesn't include
the time like it takes to fix the logo, to engrave, and then actually engrave it on in the machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all that takes like an extra.
Yeah, I'm sure it could be faster if we had more manpower, more people, like an assembly line kind of thing, but we don't. So
I know.
I mean, you said you have two kids, right?
Yeah.
Four and two boys.
Put them to work.
No, they're too young.
Well, maybe a couple years.
They would love to help. Like,
yeah, they would.
They're so intrigued by like whatever we're doing. They want to come in and we'll let them push the button to start the machine up or to turn the fan on to ventilate the room. They like the older one. He likes to take part.
Yeah.
He's four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This might be a dumb question, but do you have to do the engraving first and then build the enclosure, or do you build the enclosure and then engrave it?
Right.
We engrave first.
Yeah.
We engrave it first. Then we'll go through and cut the holes out, and then we cut the actual squares out for the cube in that order.
Yeah.
That's just what we found to be the best. Like, if you cut the squares first and then make the holes, sometimes the piece of acrylic drops just by a couple of millimeters and the holes might not be even. And then we engrave on that flat sheet
Once a cube's made, it's too hard to get that cube in the machine to engrave.
Yeah. I mean, there are laser cutters out there that can do it, but just for an at-home kind of thing, we can't. That's why we are size limited. Mm-hmm. It's just because our laser cutter at home cannot fit a larger enclosure, pretty much bigger than the 6 inches. And so, I mean, yeah, sure, if you spend like thousands and thousands of dollars, you can get a cool laser cutter that could do it, but not the one we have.
So you... You mentioned that you have some larger enclosures in the works. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah, so after that first run, we got a lot of requests for enclosures that would hold a Sturmey or, you know, some of the larger, like, 7-8-inch tarantulas. And so we're going to work on it. They should be coming out, hopefully, in the next 6 to 8 weeks. It's going to be a challenge with shipping. It's going to be expensive. The acrylic alone is going to be like, it's a thicker acrylic, which is a lot more expensive, and it's going to be a lot of work. So it's going to be a higher price point, obviously, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we'll come out with a limited run and see how it goes. And
kind of the nature of acrylic. Like the larger the enclosure, you said, like, the thicker it actually has to be.
Yeah.
Like, does that so it doesn't warp or like?
Both. It doesn't warp or just crack. Because the longer the sheet of acrylic gets, if it's thinner, it's going to be more, like, it's going to bend too much. Yeah, it's going to be, like, if you just held it out, it would kind of bow in the middle. And so you have to get a nice thick piece of acrylic. And the thicker, it's, like, exponentially more expensive. And so this one it'll be 20 inches long, 12 inches wide, 12 inches high. And it should be good for most bigger tarantulas. I mean, some people still go bigger for the Sturmeys and all that, but I think that's probably our limitation right now.
I mean, that sounds comparable to like a 10-gallon aquarium. Those dimensions,
it's the same length as a 10-gallon, I believe, and then a little bit wider.
Nice, so
a little bit more floor room for the terrestrial.
Yeah, there's only a few species that I can think of off the top of my head that would need anything larger than that.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe a Sturmey or a salmon pink bird eater or something.
Yeah.
But they would be fine in a 10-gallon.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Initially, the tarantula cribs, the name came about just because we started with one. It was like a crib for housing something. But two is just that it was for tarantulas that were slings or juveniles or dwarfs or things like that. And so, but we've kind of ventured into some of the bigger enclosures now. And it turns out, I think that's the most popular one right now is the large one, which is 12 inches by 8 inches by 8 inches. And so I think we'll kind of have to focus on making slightly bigger enclosures.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. You brought up where the name came from. Because in my mind, maybe it's just my age is showing, but when it went tarantula cribs, what I was thinking was MTV cribs. I was like, this is the high end, fancy, top of the line enclosure for your tarantula.
Yeah.
Like that's what I was.
Definitely a play on that.
Yeah.
Well, that was very cool. Because, I mean, and I'm not just like blowing smoke here. They are like the highest quality enclosures that I have in mind. And I'm counting like the Zilla and Exoterra and stuff like that. Like these are enclosures designed specifically to hold tarantulas. But I saw Russ from Aquaramax just came out with a YouTube video where he's using isopods in his. He was talking about how they're great for isopods. I know that they're great for scorpions. What other species have you heard people are keeping in your enclosures?
I've had some requests for a centipede, but I try and get the inverts or whatnot that I think will be in there so I can test it out myself. But the one I have is quite small. So, we do have some millipedes and then just other isopods. So, scorpions, I have a tailless whip scorpion, have the centipede that's still small. What else? I actually have my
baby, that milk snake.
Yeah, I have the baby milk snake in it still right now, which I don't necessarily recommend for everyone, but. It's doing well in there.
I was actually going to ask is if anybody had ever kept any kind of reptiles or any, because I know it could be difficult if you have to have like a heat lamp or a heat pad or something like that.
Yeah. But
thought maybe like some kind of frogs or something.
Yeah.
So there might be some reptiles.
One person was keeping a Pac-Man frog in it. So
nice.
I think it did okay with that.
And I've noticed there's two, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can divide up our hobby, like in groups of people, but I've noticed that there's definitely a group that really, they're okay with keeping their tarantulas in Tupperware containers that are cloudy and you can't even see them. You know, I mean, you got to like open up the lid to see what's inside. Mm-hmm. And then there are people that like to have all of them on display. And obviously I'm in that camp. Like every tarantula I have, even little slings, I like to have them in a nice looking enclosure with, you know, nice decorations that are on display. Cause that's the reason that I'm keeping them is it's like works of art or, you know, so I want to have them in a nice enclosure that, you know, is aesthetically pleasing and that I can see through very well. And I think one of the cool things with your all's business is that you're not just selling enclosures, right? You're also selling, you also have like decorations and stuff available.
Yeah. We're trying to head in that direction. I think that the primary goal is always going to be enclosures, but a lot of people were requesting that we kind of had some decoration that would fit in the enclosures. Cause a lot of the things again are for the pet store for reptiles or fish and they just don't fit into some of the smaller tanks. And so having an appropriate sized water dish or a small skull, things like that, a small plant people are asking for. And so we were obviously, I don't make all that at home. I do have a 3D printer, which we can make some of the skulls and all that and some resin. But I can't make all the fake plants and all of that. And so we're looking at manufacturers and distributors and to work with. And we hopefully in the next few, actually pretty soon, relatively soon, we should have some more stuff up on the website.
That's cool. Yeah. You sent me some little tiny skulls. Yeah. I'm a big fan of those. Like I got them all set up in enclosures. They look very cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just want to say thanks for the skulls. Definitely like those.
Skull game.
So you got the arboreal enclosure that's coming out soon. I know people are excited for that. That was another comment I saw a lot on the video where people are like, well, will this work for arboreals? So you've got that coming out.
So that we are, so we made a prototype and this, what we completely made a prototype from scratch and we drew it out and we adjusted the ventilation, talked to some people. I talked to some people at the Tarantula Takeover, actually, who only keep arboreals and kind of got their input. And we figured out a design, which should be coming out in about probably the end of November, beginning of December. Things with COVID kind of slow things down sometimes, but hopefully, as long as everything stays on track, it should be out then. We'll be coming out with the three main sizes. It's kind of analogous to the terrestrial. So we're going to have like one that is 6 inches tall for the smaller tarantulas, and then one that's 8, and then one that's 12. And then we're going to eventually come out with one that is 20 inches tall for like the big pokies and all that. So that should be pretty cool. Again, we'll run into shipping issues with it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it is what it is.
Well, even when that's just 12 inches tall, I mean, that's hitting like 80% of arboreals right there.
You know what
I mean? Like that's a good size enclosure.
Yeah.
I'm excited. So you're saying it'll should be out in time for Christmas then, right?
Yeah. Hopefully if everything goes as planned, it should be out. So far we're on schedule, but yeah, fingers crossed. So right as of now, we have just the one, we have the prototype we made and I haven't housed anything in it. I do have a P Metallica that I got from Fear Not that I was going to put in it in the prototype, but I decided not to put anything just in case I need to take pictures and do all that for the website.
So you guys, you just mentioned your website. That's tarantulacribs.com. And from there, people can order enclosure. Like what all do you have available there?
Yeah. So we enclosures primarily, but we're also putting up some of the decoration and all that. Eventually we'll hope to grow the website a little bit more and maybe get some shirts. We've had some t-shirt requests, so I need to work on that. Hopefully that'll be coming out soon.
You have like a cleaning cloth you just put up.
Yeah.
Fingerprints.
Yeah, because acrylic does, you know, one of the properties of acrylic is it does scratch and it does blemish pretty easily. There's not too much we can do about that, especially the higher quality the acrylic gets, actually, because the more smooth the surface is, the easier it'll scratch. So we're going to get some, we're going to work with some of the cleaning solution manufacturers to get some cleaning solution on there, and then the microfiber cloth just to take care of the acrylic. And then also any decorations. So plants, we're going to be getting some plants to go in the arboreal enclosures that are a little bit taller. And then some more skulls. Had a lot of requests for skulls. So we're getting some like
watering dishes
too. Yeah. And then some water dishes and hides and all that.
Yeah. That's so a good idea.
A few different skulls coming.
Yeah. A few different types of skulls. So we kind of just want to get the whole package for tarantulas, you know. And I don't really have any plans to expand to any other animals or anything like that. I just want to stick with tarantulas.
I mean, the tarantula hobby is growing exponentially right now. Yeah. So I feel like you're kind of getting in on the ground floor. Just spitballing here, but I feel like, you know, if you're going to be adding more skulls to your availability, you really need to get a tarantula collective skull.
Yeah.
To design something.
That would be neat. We definitely should.
That would be pretty cool. Are you guys doing anything special for Halloween? You got anything like any kind of.
Yeah, well, we'll take the kids out. I think we'll, with COVID and all that, I think the city kind of mandates or restricts some of it with some of the subdivisions, but we're going to do like a trunk or treat or something like that with our friends. But nothing too much. I know my oldest son really likes Halloween, actually. I took him to the Halloween store and he was like all into like the really scary costumes and all that. So
Very cool.
My first job ever was I worked in a haunted house.
Nice.
Yeah. The darkness of the house, which
was this pretty scary?
It's actually I think it's rated one of the best in the country. It's pretty it's pretty good.
That's awesome.
It was a good first job.
Yeah. I would imagine. We go all out here at my house with decorations. I got like little animatronic grave or what do they call them? The grave keeper or something like that. That's not it. I can't even remember.
Yeah.
It's like a Grim Reaper skeleton guy that welcomes you to it's like an all graveyard theme with spiders and spider webs and all that kind of stuff. I did a video on it last year and I was going to shoot one because we got all the decorations. I was going to do it this weekend, but it's just been cold and rainy. So I'm like, got to wait for a good weather day to do it. I did a video unboxing some of your all's enclosures that you sent me. And I think I even made another video where I was talking about them, but after we're done with this podcast, I got to rehouse some tarantulas. And I'm going to be rehousing them in some more tarantula cribs enclosures.
Sweet.
And I think that's going to be like my Halloween themed episode. That'll be coming out on Halloween. So everybody be sure to check that out. Cause you sent me one of the big ones. So I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
And I'm debating who to put in there. Like that's the hardest. That's what's holding me up right now.
We'll decide who gets the nice one. We'll probably have a sale or something for Halloween. So you guys can check it out.
Oh yeah. That would be cool. You're all pretty active on Instagram. You mentioned you got like 3,000 subscribers.
Yeah, almost. So we've slowed down over the last few days as I'm trying to get caught up on orders. But I just got a new camera, and so trying to learn that, trying to take a page out of your book. But before that, all our pictures were just iPhone, so it was it was pretty good. I mean, we have about we're almost at 3,000. Hopefully, we'll get there by the end of the month. Do another giveaway, 3,000.
What kind of camera did you get? Just out of curiosity.
I got one of the Sony mirrorless cameras. I can't remember the exact.
Yeah. Exact Sony one. They make some good cameras, man. You'll get some awesome pictures there.
Yeah. Got to learn it.
So we got, that's the hardest part, the learning curve on using cameras. It's there's so many things you can do with them. It's overwhelming. I've learned the best way is just do it. Just jump in feet first and learn as you go.
For sure.
So you got your website, you got your Instagram. Are you guys on Facebook at all?
Well, we do have Facebook. I think Instagram is linked to Facebook. We don't check it as much. We'll be better about that. But mostly Instagram. If the easiest way to reach us by far is just getting on Instagram and reply to your message there for sure.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, so I was going to ask if people wanted to reach out to you guys, what would be the best way to do Instagram. That? So hitting you up on Instagram.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I'm going to be setting up, I was thinking about putting a Theraphosa sturmi, or I'm sorry, a blondie in that large enclosure because I got one that needs a. Have you had anyone that's done any bioactive setups in your enclosures yet?
I haven't had any feedback on a bioactive. I mean, I have a bioactive with the millipedes and isopods and all that, and it's actually, they're doing pretty well in there. I haven't had any tarantulas in a bioactive yet.
I was hesitant about doing it until I saw Russ from Aquaramax Pets. I saw his video where he was keeping isopods in there, and they seemed to be thriving. And I was like, well, yeah, there's enough air circulation, and I don't know. I felt like, I could think that what I was the most worried about would be the lighting, because I just wasn't sure how acrylic responded to having light. Like, it wouldn't be on, sitting on it, but it would be under a light, a UV type light. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't sure, because like I said, I'm not the smartest guy out there, but I didn't know if it was like, it would block UV light, if the plants would be able to grow in there well. I don't think it'll block,
but I do think with all acrylic, any exposure to sunlight or UV light, I guess, would, there's the risk of it yellowing. And the better quality acrylic you use, the less likely that is to happen. And I hope and I think that there's a less chance of it yellowing, because we do actively try and get the better quality acrylic. But again, in time, who knows? Over time, acrylic will yellow. And if it takes in moisture, it will warp eventually. It's just a question of how long, or it's a question of what kind of acrylic you use. So, I mean, the good thing is with isopods, you know, if it warps a little bit, it's probably not going to do that much damage. But I do have my isopods. I have dairy cows and a millipede. Millipedes, I think it's like the Texas giant millipede or something, set up in a bioactive. And so far, so good. Haven't had any issues, and they seem to be doing well.
Cool. Yeah, I think I'm going to try it out. So it'll be like an experiment. I'll let you know how it goes. And
yeah.
I mean, I don't foresee any problems, but I just wanted to run that by you just in case it was like some huge danger. And you're like, it's not a good idea.
No.
But I think it'll be cool, because it's not going to be very bright lights or hot. It's just an LED light, you know?
Yeah. And yeah.
They needed a little bit of moisture, but it's not like super swampy or anything either. So it should be, I'm excited. I'll just say that. I look forward to setting it up. I'll be doing that probably towards the end of the month, which is quickly approaching. Man, I can't believe how late it's getting already. One last question, because I know you guys got to go. We got to wrap this up. What is your favorite genus or species of tarantula that you have in your collection right now? Like, what are you most stoked to keep? What do you show off to people when they come by?
So I think the Chromatopelma sanpubescens is my favorite. I've said it before. If I could keep one tarantula, it would be the green bottle blue. I mean, it's feeding response. Our son really likes it too. He's 4 and he comes up and asks to see the green bottle blue. feeding response, the colors, the webbing. I think it's the good all around tarantula. And so we have that in one of our like engraved cases and all that. So it says Chromatopelma sanpubescens over the top, and right underneath that he has this pretty extensive webbing. So it looks pretty cool.
That is awesome. I like that. You should post a picture of that on Instagram. Yeah. This I'll week, so people can see it when they hear the podcast. They'll be like, oh, I want to see that.
Yeah.
What about you, Alina? Do you have a favorite?
I think I like the pumpkin patch. Yeah. I like him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the orange in there. The orange and black looks really nice. The kids really like that one, too.
Yeah. Yeah. He just molted out male.
Yeah, so his colors are really vibrant right now. Yeah, they look really pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely.
That's awesome.
He's a good eater, too. Put in a cricket, he'll chase it down.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I actually got the Florida bark scorpions from Fear Not that you sent over there.
Oh, and, nice.
I was feeding them this morning, and they're still pretty small. So I was putting in flightless fruit flies, and they were just chasing them right down, like actually chasing them down. It was pretty cool to watch.
I saw you posted a picture of that on Instagram, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Earlier today. That's pretty cool. Yeah, they're doing well.
Yeah, they're voracious eaters. I actually, you can't see it on the camera, but like right off, where is the camera? Like right off over here is my communal. So like while I'm talking to you guys, you might sometimes see me like freaking out looking over here. The scorpions have just been crawling around doing some crazy things.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like trying to scratch its tail or something like that. So I'm like, what in the world is this thing doing? It was weird looking, but yeah, they're fascinating. Like I... just recently, the past few years, really started getting into scorpions. And
yeah.
I'd always just been hesitant because I'd had a few in the past and I just never really saw them much and thought they were boring.
Yeah.
But now I've got a lot of different species. I'm pretty fascinated by them. And I think the Florida bark scorpion is probably up there with my favorites. So you're going to enjoy watching that guy grow.
Yeah. Our youngest son really likes the scorpions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many did you get? Did you just get one or did you get multiple?
I got three of each.
Three of them?
Yeah.
Are you going to try and keep them communally when they get larger? Or are you going to keep them separate?
When they get larger, we can try it out. I don't want to risk them eating each other right now, but we'll see what happens. Right now, they're all in their own little enclosures.
Yeah, that other one.
Yeah.
What's that one called?
Yeah, the Panidus cavamanus. I can't even remember the common name. It's the Latin name.
Oh, I think that one is the red cave scorpion or something like that.
That's right.
Don't have that one. I just last Tuesday did a video on the emperor scorpion and was talking about the red claw scorpion, and that's and I can't remember its scientific name right now, but when I was talking about, like, I recorded myself talking, but instead of saying red claw the entire time, I kept saying red cave. And then, like, I had to go back, like, wow, those are two different species. Freaking common names drive me crazy sometimes. But so everybody go check out Tarantula Cribs website, tarantulacribs.com. Check out their Instagram if you just want to see what they got going on in their collection and some cool products you guys have coming out here in the near future. I really appreciate you guys being willing to do the podcast, because one reason I wanted to get you on here is just I think it's awesome that there's finally somebody out there making tarantula enclosures that actually keeps tarantulas. Like, I think that is a huge plus, and that's something that, you know, a lot of people don't think about when they're, I mean, when you just look at the market, you see a lot of people selling tarantula enclosures that obviously don't keep them, because there's some huge issues with those enclosures. And I think you guys are putting out a very high quality product that is just, it's amazing. It's some great stuff. And I recommend you to anybody that I've talked to that's like, what kind of enclosure should I get? I'm like, you got to get a Tarantula Cribs one, because, you know, if you want to get the best, that's the way to go.
Yeah. So
applause
you so
to you guys. I think I've got an applause button. Is this it? Is that making? There we go.
Yeah.
So you guys are awesome. And I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, it was awesome to get to meet you guys. Like, we've talked through Instagram and stuff like that, but you guys are much better looking than what I had envisioned in my head. Like, you turn on the screen, I was like, those are beautiful people. I don't know what I had in my mind, but I think I thought you all just looked like me. Like, some middle-aged, bald people. But yeah, you guys are awesome. It was really cool getting to talk to you and meet you, and thank you again. Thank you so much for doing
this. Likewise. Thank you so much for having us. Yeah. I mean, we're open to ideas or anything else. And, you know, we just want to make good enclosures for the tarantulas and have people put them on display. That's what we like to see. Post your pictures up.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for having us. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
I'm sure we will be talking again very soon in the future, and good luck with everything. Everybody go check out their website if you want to get some of the best enclosures that are available for your tarantulas. You got to go with Tarantula Cribs. You can check out my YouTube video that I did unboxing and showcasing some of theirs. You can also check out Aquarimax Pets, Tarantula Cat. She did a video on them as well, didn't she?
Yeah.
I believe I saw that. Alex at Tarantula Haven. Like, a lot of people are using them. A lot of people are really liking them. So I highly suggest you check that out. Thanks again for listening to the podcast. It's always cool having you guys. You know, it's just awesome that you're downloading these and listening to them. If you're checking it out on YouTube, go into the description. I'll have links for Tarantula Cribs website and Instagram there as well. Be sure to listen to the Exotic Pet Collective every Thursday, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, pretty much anywhere you listen to your podcasts. You can find us. All right. Thank you. We'll see you next week.